What you're about to listen to was originally broadcast on 98.5 Sunshine FM, Perth, Western Australia. For more details, go to the website sunshinefm.ws.
I have a very special guest with me this morning. He started appearing on our television screens in the late 70s, but his big break came in the early 80s with the massive success of the movie The Man from Snowy River. He's performed in a variety of stage productions and even been a judge on Australia's Got Talent. He was recently named Australia's Most Outstanding Club Performer of the Year and Vocal Performer of the Year at the 2012 annual ACE Awards. He's my special guest this morning, Tom Berlinson. Thanks for dropping in.
Pleasure, Rodney. Good morning.
Thinking back to, I guess, that big break for you, Man from Snowy River, you're really a horse rider?
I wasn't at the time. No, I wasn't. I had to tell the producers and the director at the screen test that when they told me about this role and about the movie that I'd sat on a horse maybe two or three times in my life, and they said, don't worry about that. They had in mind that they would double the actor who played Jim Craig, the man from Snowy River, much more than it eventuated, mainly because I discovered through the preparation period that I had somewhat of a natural ability on horseback and a natural affinity with horses, and I was determined that if I was going to play this character convincingly, I had to look like I'd been on and around horses all my life. So I really applied 100% effort to that, had some great teachers, the mountain cattlemen of the high country of Victoria, and so I ended up doing much more of the riding than anybody ever expected.
So how long did you have from when you were told, yes, you have the part, to actually filming and doing some of those amazing horse rides that you did in the movie?
Yeah, a few months. I started getting some training in Sydney and then went down, and the producers had provided 6 weeks preparation time, so I had 6 weeks before filming started. But then during the shoot, I was also on horseback pretty much every day. Then, and it wasn't until the end of the shooting period that we actually did the ride sequences. So I had quite a bit of time to, as I say, be on horseback, you know, almost all day, every day, and was right into it. So by the time we came to do Jim's ride, and indeed the terrible descent, as described by Banjo Patterson in the poem, I was able to talk them into me doing that as well.
So you took them into that?
Yes, I did. I mean, I just knew, Rodney, that I sensed somehow that, well, okay, the reason that the man from Snowy River became a legend in the first place is that he rode down that terrible descent when even Clancy pulled his horse up and said, I'm not going down there, right? So
yeah, yeah.
He did, and alone and unassisted, brought the horses back. So I knew that what they had planned for the terrible descent was going to be the pivotal, most memorable moment of the film. And I thought, well, that's got to be me. It's got to be, hopefully, this face the character that hopefully the audience have become involved with, seeing him actually do that. So I lobbied the producer and the director and got the master of horse on side. And, you know, this isn't the sort of thing that normally an actor is allowed to do, but they allowed me to do it, and it is definitely me. And if you look carefully, you can see it's me in all those profile shots going down the hill in the movie.
How many takes did you have to do?
8.
Wow.
After all that, I have to tell you, though, Roddy, after all of that, when I was at the top of the hill and, you know, about to do the first take, and I looked down at my hands on the reins and they were shaking, and I said to myself, what am I doing? I'm an actor. But nevertheless, by that stage, I was, you know, I'd created it myself, and we did 8 takes of it, and it turned out to be the most memorable moment of the film.
Well, after that, you went on to a movie about Farlap. Did you start getting offers from everyone for horsey movies?
Well, I think I was pretty much typecast as the young man on the horse there for a few years after that. But look, you know, playing Tommy Woodcock, one of the great social heroes of Australian history, and a much loved person, that was a real honour. And I think also they made a very decent film out of the story of Farlap. And it was great that Tommy Woodcock was still alive when they made it. So it was really a tribute to him. And he did some of the publicity with me when the movie was released, and it was a real honour. So, yes, okay, two movies of similar style and both involving horses. I took pains in the following years to do movies that were very different to those, but probably Snowy River is still the single piece of work for which I'm best known.
And you have done such a range of other work acting. So how did you summon up the courage to actually start to sing in public? I mean, it's one thing to think, yeah, I've got a reasonable voice and I can sing in the shower, but to actually you know, be this actor that everyone knows suddenly singing. How was that happening?
Well, it came about, really. I've loved the music of Frank Sinatra all my life. And in my late teens, I started just singing along with Sinatra, right, to his records. And I found that there was a natural similarity in tone and to a certain extent in pitch, just a natural similarity. And I also loved it so much that it became a study of Sinatra's singing technique, where he breathes, how long he holds notes, that distinctive phrasing that Sinatra had. I love the whole style of music. But okay, this was something that was really for me and my friends. It wasn't meant to be a professional exercise at all. I was concentrating on being a young actor. But then later on, I suppose, out of necessity, really, Rodney, it became, you know, there wasn't much acting work around, and I thought, well, I've got to do something. And I wrote a song about Sinatra, which we recorded with a big band arrangement. It was called The Man in the Hat, and it was about my love for the music of Sinatra and how his music had affected my life. I sang the song on The Midday Show, which was then hosted by Ray Martin. And then we heard about this miniseries that was going to be made by Sinatra's daughter, Tina, in Los Angeles, called Sinatra. Anyway, I was sent audition scenes for the part, to audition for the role of the young Frank Sinatra. And on the end of that audition tape that I sent to Tina Sinatra, I put me singing this song, The Man in the Hat, on the end of the tape. Well, as it turned out, she cast another actor to play the part of her father, but she needed someone to sing the voice of her father as a young man. She asked me to fly to Los Angeles and sing for her, which I did, and then she offered me this most extraordinary job of singing the voice of really one of the recognized great singers of the 20th century, Frank Sinatra. So then it became known back here in Australia that I'd done this job, and it led to really a big musical development in my career. So at first, yes, it was nerve-wracking. Here was I, not even a professional singer, in this amazing situation, but you know, I think over the years I've got better at it, and through experience, of course.
And the next thing you know, you're being a voice double for the man you've always idolised, and you did that again with the Aussie movie The Night We Called It a Day, providing, yes, Sinatra's singing voice
as a much older man, because that movie was set in 1974 when Sinatra toured the infamous tour where he insulted the press, and then the unions went out against him and all of that, and Dennis Hopper played Sinatra as an older man, but again they used my singing voice in that production. And of course I also created my own show, produced and starred in and created my own show about Sinatra called Frank, A Life in Song, in 1998, which we toured all around the country and then took to Toronto in Canada as well as Las Vegas. And so this musical development has really been my primary source of employment and income for the last several years now.
And while you've spent most of your life here in Australia, originally from Canada, what was it like taking that show back to your home country?
Well, there was some kind of a feeling of, the prodigal son returns, because I'd only been 18 months old when my parents moved from Toronto. But nevertheless, it was the place of my birth, and we still have family friends who live there. So, and we found a beautiful theatre, the St. Lawrence Centre for the Arts, down there in downtown Toronto, and there's a very well-established theatre-going audience in Toronto. And so, I have to tell you, we were very well received there by the Canadian audiences. And we had a very successful sort of, 5.5-week season there in the Bloomer Appel Theatre. It was great.
And currently, you've really expanded beyond only doing Frank's music to music from that swing era. So I guess there were other heroes from the swing era that you thought, yeah, I can do their music too.
Well, definitely. I mean, this new show, Now We're Swinging, is very similar in style to the Frank, A Life in Song show, but I've expanded it. I've expanded the repertoire, and so now we celebrate not only Sinatra in Now We're Swinging, but some of his contemporaries, Nat King Cole and Tony Bennett and Sammy Davis Jr. and Dean Martin and Bobby Darin. So, those great exponents of this style of music of the 1950s and 60s. Now, the songs made famous by those men have been revived much more recently by singers such as Harry Connick Jr. and Robbie Williams, and especially Michael Bublé. So this music has sort of come back into style again, which is great, I think. So the show celebrates the success of all of those men. I tell a bit of a story in between of biographical details about those men, how swing music went in and out of style over the years and how that affected the careers of those men, and then on to the development much more recently and the great success of Bublé. So many, many songs from the Great American Songbook, and I travel around with an 8-piece band, including trumpet and trombone and 2 saxophones and piano, bass, drums, guitar. So once they get going, there's a pretty good sound there, and has those horn lines that are so important for this kind of music. So we've played the show in every state and territory in the country now, and the response has been fantastic. I really enjoy doing it, and I think people sense that, and they tell me that they really enjoy seeing it.
So you're performing at Mandurah tonight?
Mandurah tonight, and then Bunbury tomorrow night, and then in here in Perth at the Octagon Theatre on Saturday night.
Well, it's been a delight to chat with you. I'm going to play one of my favourite swing songs that you've done. This comes from a CD which is live. Must have been a thrill to put together a live CD.
Absolutely, and this is with the Sydney All-Star Big Band, and I think you're going to play the Bobby Darin classic, are you not?
Absolutely. It's Mac the Knife. Tom, thanks for dropping in.
Pleasure. Thank you, Rodney.
Hey, the shark has pretty teeth, dear. And he shows them pearly white.
For more details on this and other programs, contact 98.5 Sunshine FM, Perth, Western Australia, via the website sunshinefm.ws. All material is subject to copyright.